Hi, and welcome back to Christmas Clatter. I'm Todd Killian. Well, here we are just a few days away before Halloween, or the last speed bump before Christmas, as I like to affectionately call it. But hope you guys are having a great, great October. Just about done. We'll be into November. Then we can really, really kick off the Christmas season. Everybody will not be on board, but most people will be by then. So it's as Christmas fans and Christmas fans and those that love Christmas year round, it's our time. We are in our peak season, and we welcome those in that like to keep Christmas traditionally where it goes. Thanks for joining us here on Christmas Clatter. We hope you find a welcome seat to enjoy the holidays with us. Just a few announcements. The Christmas Puzzle Exchange is closed for registration. Those getting names to mail puzzles should be receiving those shortly if you have not received them already. The other thing is Christmas Without Cancer shirts are still available for a few more days. I might let it go a little bit past October, just to make sure that everybody that wants a Christmas Without Cancer shirt can get one. And for those that don't know, we are raising money for a charity called Christmas Without Cancer. They are trying to make Christmas happen for families that are battling cancer. And to support them, just go to ChristmasClatterMerch.com. You will see a Christmas Without Cancer design there. Any merchandise bought with that design, all proceeds go to Christmas Without Cancer. So you definitely want to help out if you can, if you haven't already. I had a lot of great response on that, and I really, really appreciate everybody doing that. Well, we're winding up, you know, for the home stretch. Big episode today. I can't believe this actually happened. Carolyn Grimes is joining us here on Christmas Clatter today, and she is sharp as a tack. Just a lot of fun talking with her. And if you don't know who Carolyn Grimes is, she played Zuzu Bailey in It's a Wonderful Life. That's the daughter of George Bailey, played by Jimmy Stewart, who gave him the pedals. And then towards the end of the movie said, look, Daddy, teacher says every time a bell rings, an angel gets its wings. She joins Christmas Clatter to talk about her time on set, her time with Jimmy Stewart. She also talks about time with Cary Grant because she was in the Bishop's Wife and on the set of Rio Grande as well. Such an honor talking with her. It was such a big deal that I invited our friend and Christmas Clatter regular, Alonzo Duraldi, a film critic from The Wrap and Linoleum Knife podcast, to step in as my first ever co-host. So enough of me yakking. Here is Miss Carolyn Grimes, Zuzu Bailey. Well, joining me here on Christmas Clatter is a first time, so I guess it's first time for everything. I have a Christmas Clatter co-host, the one and only Alonzo Duraldi.
Hello.
Alonzo, thanks so much for joining me.
Oh, I would have been angry if you hadn't invited me to be here today.
Well, what could be so important enough for Alonzo to hop on here with me to have a co-host? And that is no other than we are being joined by Miss Carolyn Grimes. And if you're unfamiliar with that name, all I have to tell you is Zuzu Bailey, It's a Wonderful Life. And yes, she was the little girl that uttered about bells and angels and wings. So Carolyn, thanks so much for being on the phone with us today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, I'm really honored. I know I speak for me and Alonzo that we are both dear, dear fans of this movie and have been for quite some time. And when the opportunity arose to have you, I jumped at it with everything I had. So,
well, Christmas is my favorite time of the year, and I'm sure it's a lot of people's favorite time of the year.
Oh, I'm sure it is. So we are on the 75th anniversary of the release of It's a Wonderful Life. So take us back. Do you remember how you got involved with the movie?
Well, of course, my mom put me in the business when I was four. So, you know, most of the kids in Hollywood were in movies certain times in their lives because it was the movie industry was all really there was in Hollywood during those days. So wasn't anything unusual or special to be in movies. But I started at 4 and I'd already done 4 movies before I did It's a Wonderful Life. And we, all the kids in Hollywood kind of had the same agent. Her name was Lola Moore, and she would send her clients out when they'd ask, like they'd ask for, they wanted a blonde haired freckle little girl. Well, she would send me out or whoever else she had. And there were 5 of us that went to the office. They had casting one-on-one, and they didn't have auditions back then. And so we went to the casting office, and my mom took me there, and Frank Capra handpicked me. He handpicked every person in that movie. And that's very unusual for the director to do that. Usually he has casting people that do take care of things like that for him, but he was hands-on director all the way. And so I feel very appreciative. He even handpicked his extras. So it was pretty nice experience all around for me to be picked by him to be in that film.
I imagine so. I didn't realize he handpicked so many of the cast, so much of the cast. I know he really, narrowed down on Jimmy Stewart for this role.
But, well, he was a given. Donna had 2 competitors.
this was, an interesting point in for both Capra and Stewart. This was the first movie they made after coming back from World War II, where, you know, Stewart had been in combat and Capra was making films for the U.S. War Office. And this was, you know, the first movie for his for Capra's kind of, you know, indie film label, which unfortunately didn't last all that long. About how long was your stint in the film in terms of number of days that you shot? Was it a couple weeks? Was it a month? How long did your job on It's a Wonderful Life last?
Well, us kids were on the set for 2 weeks. And it was hot and it was just beastly.
Currently for kid actors who work in films, there's a whole structure in place about they can only work so many hours and they have to have tutors. I'm imagining in the 1940s, it was a little less structured for what your workday was like.
Oh, not really. We had to have a teacher who was a person from the health and welfare department always on the set, whether it was during school or not, you know, maybe summer vacation. It was always women back then, but she always had to be there. Mm-hmm. And she was there every day. And when school was on, we, of course, had to be schooled. And so they usually rig up a dressing room. And, you know, they were on wheels. Mm-hmm. But, you would go and study in between doing your scenes, but for It's a Wonderful Life, we didn't have to do that. So we just kind of played and had fun during the parts where we weren't working. That was really fun because there were other kids on the set. See that yeah. A lot of times when I was in a movie and I'd just be me, I wouldn't have anybody to play with, but this was great because, I could torture my little brother I still torture him today.
Oh, that's great. So did you get, this movie did win an award for special effects for the snow. So did you get to play in that wonderful new created snow that they had?
Well, that was really my favorite part of the whole movie. I'll tell you what, I was born and raised in Hollywood. It doesn't snow in Hollywood. Oh, I had never seen anything like that before. I was just so interested in it. And, you know, it was, some of it was hard and some of it fell. And it was like, it was so cool. I was just so excited to see this snow because I hadn't seen it before. I think the other part about it was the Christmas tree. I loved the Christmas tree. It was so big. And I was a only child, and my dad didn't make a lot of money. So we had a little Christmas tree on a table every year. So it was a real treat for me to see this giant Christmas tree.
I was thinking about this, you know, because, Zuzu is upstairs, you know, sick with a cold. You were not in what is one of the most intense scenes in the film, where George Bailey has his meltdown and he's, you know, kicking stuff over and knocking off tables and yelling at his children, which I'm sure was a tough scene, you know, for your fellow, you know, juvenile actors to be in. Yes, it's make-believe and yes, we're acting, but that's a really intense moment in the film. I mean, just watching it now, 75 years later, it's still tough to watch. And I'm just wondering if you were there that day and maybe witnessed it from the side, if the kids that you worked with talked about it later, just in terms of being, you know, an intense day on the set or anything like that.
Oh, yes. Carol Coombs-Mueller, who played the piano, she really did cry. I mean, that was real. It frightened her a great deal. So she was really crying for real. And I really I wasn't on the set that day, so I didn't know anything about that. But you'd be surprised at the amount of people who send me a picture of that scene to sign. And they say, how is it? Were you scared? This, that, and the other. I always say, no, I'm sick upstairs in bed. I don't even know what this is going on.
Pay attention, people.
Yeah. Well, that's a. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay. Fine.
Well, I'm glad Alonzo brought that scene up, because that is, even to this day when I watch it, it's like kind of unnerving a little bit, you know, watching this breakdown and stuff. But that did it. Because you were sick upstairs, that did allow you to be, I believe, if memory serves me correct, the only child in the movie to have one-on-one time with a scene with, you know, George Bailey with Jimmy Stewart. So how was it filming that scene in the bedroom where he comes and checks on you and you hand him those famous petals he puts in his pocket?
Well, I kind of have to correct you there, because he did have a one-on-one with my little brother.
Okay.
With Jimmy Hawkins, little Tommy, the kid who burped.
Oh, okay.
Yes. True.
Yes. He was in on his lap, and he had a Santa Claus mask on.
Yeah.
And George was crying. And to this day, Jimmy remembers how, when he pulled him in to his chest and held him tight, that Santa Claus mask rubbed his face raw, and he couldn't show or say anything, and he'll never forget that. He always remembers how that mask hurt his face when Jimmy Stewart, you know, brought him close to him. But that was a one-on-one.
Yeah, so. True.
But for me to be with him on a one-on-one, it took us several days to actually film that, because Capper's he's a perfectionist, so everything was done over and over again. And I just thought it was another scene, another job. It wasn't anything really special, I have to say, because it was just a scene. There was one place in the scene where I messed up a line, and Jimmy Stewart said, that's okay, Carol, and you'll get it right next time. And I did. So I felt real good about that. And I felt like in later years, I look back and I think he kind of taught me a lesson that it's okay to make a mistake and you can fix it, you know. So that was a real good thing for him to do. But he was very gentle. And my gosh, his hands were as big as my whole face.
There is that moment where he puts he's checking your temperature, and it does seem like your entire face is in his hand.
My whole face. He's got his hand over it. It's amazing. He was quite the guy. And I rode down his back on the stairs. You know, he had Mary's hand in one hand, and then he had little Tommy under his arm in the other one, and I'm hanging on his back going down those stairs, hang on his neck and wrap my feet around his back. I mean, we did that probably 20 times, and you know, each time he was so gentle and so kind. He always let me down so easy, and he was just a real gentle soul, and he was really great to work with.
Carolyn Grimes did her own stunts, people.
There you go.
Yeah. So I'm curious, as a 6-year old, you know, you were like you said, this was, you'd done 4 or 5 films before this. Did you have a sense of Jimmy Stewart being Jimmy Stewart, or was it just, this is the guy I'm working with on this movie, and, you know, only later kind of understanding his place in the Hollywood pantheon?
Oh, I understood later. My mother brought me up to not even know what a star was. I mean, stars were just regular people to me. We'd go to commissary and have lunch, and, you know, I would say hi to some pretty famous people, and, you know, and they'd say, hi, Carolyn. I mean, they were just friends. I was brought up not to really, you know, there was no television. There was very little influence around you. You didn't see all that much of, the things like you do today. So I had no idea. They were just, you know, my friends.
That's the benefit of an industry town. Everybody's just there to work.
Right. Absolutely. So you come down the stairs, and then there's the big, you know, climax at the end where people are coming in and giving the Baileys money to keep them from going to jail. And the bell starts ringing on the Christmas tree, and you utter that infamous line, look, Daddy, teacher says every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings. Now, that line has probably, if you list it in movies in all, you know, it's got to be one of the top 10, top 5 most recognizable lines, movie quotes of all time. And I got a feeling that at the time when you said it, you probably didn't think it was much of anything, but as you get to reflect over the years, you know, I'm not going to ask you here, because I'm sure you've been asked to say that line a thousand times over. But it's a little bit of a tongue twister line. I never thought about it until I tried to say it. So when you were given that line, did you have trouble with it at first? And then what did that line come to mean to you?
Oh, no, I didn't have any trouble with it. It was an easy line, but it didn't really, it didn't ring a bell. And so, you know, I did the line and I didn't even think any more about it. But today, you can ask somebody if they'd ever seen the movie, It's a Wonderful Life, and they would say, no, no, no. But then you ask them, have you ever heard the line, every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings? And they say, yes, oh, sure, you know. So it stands alone, I think, in the history of movie making. I had no idea. And Capra was just a genius at making things like that happen. And he knew what to do, and he just had such wonderful talent.
Yes, yes, he was. He's one of my favorites, honestly. I really enjoy all that. All the stuff he put out.
So part of the legend of It's Wonderful Life is that, you know, it was nominated for Academy Awards. It did okay at the box office, but it didn't become a massive hit, and it wasn't necessarily a beloved film in its own era. And then it wasn't until, you know, the copyright lapsed and it went to the public domain. And, you know, I grew up in the 1970s, where it just was the wallpaper of television for all of December. You know, yeah. It would finish on one channel and you'd switch over and it'd be starting up somewhere else. But then yeah. I heard you'd actually never seen the film until the 80s.
That's correct. That's very true. You know, they didn't renew the copyright. Yeah, well, they did. Well, you see, when I was 15, I was orphaned. Mm-hmm. And the court in Hollywood shipped me to a little town in Missouri. You're familiar with that state?
Yes.
And the town was Osceola, Missouri. There were 800 people in the whole town. And I had been going to LA High. There were 900 kids in my class.
Wow.
So for me to end up in this little farm town with 30 kids in my class, it was like a different world. And I had to adjust. In order to do that, I had to let everything go that I'd had before, because I knew I wasn't going to get out of this mess. So I stayed there. And within a year, I really began to realize how wonderful the people were. And I just never thought about Hollywood again. And I knew that, well, I lived with a mean person that wouldn't let me have any connection with any of my friends or anybody that I knew in California. Wow. And so I just kind of decided that if that's what it was going to be, I was going to make it the best I could in my new life. And so that's what I did. So I just kind of put the Hollywood days in the closet and forgot them. And so, no, I didn't see it. I knew that it was not renewed, but I didn't think too much about it. And when they started showing it nonstop, you know, the reason they did that was because the television stations didn't have to pay anything.
Right.
So that was why you saw it on so many stations. But I still didn't think anything about it. Well, anyway, I ended up with 7 kids. And so I lived kind of way out in the country in a big old house. And I lived in the laundry room and the kitchen and the car, because I was transporting kids all over all the time. So, you know, I didn't really have time to sit down and watch TV. Maybe I'd catch Johnny Carson at night before I went to bed, but that was about it. So someone knocked on my door, and here I'm out in the country, and they said, "Were you that little girl that played the part of Zuzu in the movie It's a Wonderful Life?" And I said, "Yeah." And it was a reporter. And so he said, "Can I have an interview?" And I said, "Well, okay." So I brought all my memorabilia up from the basement. We had an interview. And this kind of started happening frequently. And pretty soon.
I'm sorry, what year was this? Just if you remember.
1980.
Oh, okay.
And I started getting fan mail. And wow. I thought, what in the world is going on here? I thought, well, maybe I better sit down and watch the movie. So I did. And of course, I realized what a masterpiece it was and what a great lesson it is in life. And so I've been a trumpeter of the movie ever since.
So glad you have, because it's such a great movie to, you know, to honor and you know, having a season like Christmas for it to come back in everybody's forefront of their mind has been just a great thing, because, you know, a lot of great movies just kind of get forgotten because there's no, I guess, reason to go back to them unless you think about them. But, you know, with Christmas and It's a Wonderful Life being so tied to Christmas, it's like, you know, the movie can live on and on and on. And
well, its messages live on and on. Yeah. I mean, each man matters. Each life matters.
Yep.
We all make a difference. George Absolutely. Bailey taught us a lot of lessons in life. And you go on this roller coaster of emotions while you're watching it. You know, yeah. You're angry, you're sad, you know, and then you're happy. And it's quite the deal. And, you know, it was marketed as a romantic comedy.
Right.
I don't think it was a romantic comedy. There's a lot of reasons why it wasn't a hit back then. So,
yeah.
But I started doing some little appearances locally because I was still raising kids. And then in 1993, for the kind of close to the 50th anniversary, the Target stores celebrated It's a Wonderful Life in their stores that year. So they decided they would reunite the Bailey kids.
Wow.
So we were reunited, and we traveled all over at the various Target stores, and we had no idea people, you know, embraced the movie like they did. But my goodness, they'd come through the line, hundreds of people. We were just so taken aback and so amazed that it sort of has become my way of life since then. I've been on the road ever since 1993. So,
yeah.
I just want to say, as the youngest of seven children myself, I salute your efforts because I know that's more than a handful to deal with.
You know about living in the car and the food and
yes, ma'am.
All you do, you live your life cooking. You know, that's why I wrote a cookbook.
That's right.
There you go. Yeah, let's talk about the cookbook. Where did that besides the your life's duty of taking care of seven kids? Where did that come from?
Well, I cook so much, and I met a fella who was a publicity guy in Detroit, and he brought me in for several. He sort of kind of managed me for a little bit, and brought me in for several appearances, and did. I mean, we became very, very good friends just like 30 years ago. And he and I decided, wouldn't it be fun? Because he liked to cook and I liked to cook. So we put our minds together and decided we'd do this book. So we did the book and it came out in the 50th anniversary of the film. So I got the idea a few months ago that it might be kind of fun to go a step further. And of course, by this time, I'm really friends with all the people, you know, that are still living from the film, you know, all the cast members. And so I celebrate Christmas every year with all of them. And for little Jimmy Hawkins, my little brother in the movie, he became like my real brother. And we're very, very close. So I'm really thrilled about that. There's Janine Ruse, who played young Violet Bick at the soda fountain scene. Mm. She's still with us. And Harry Bailey's wife, Ruth Patton Moss, is still alive. She's in her 90s, but she's still alive. Yeah, and she may come to the Christmas festival we have every year in Seneca Falls. And then Carol Coombs Mueller is still with us, and Jimmy Hawkins, who was little Tommy. And there's a lot of other people, like the boys that were in the scene where they slid down the ice. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of them. Yeah. And then there's some that were babies. They showed a baby in when Petey was born.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
It showed... Well, those were twins. So there, and baby Janie is still alive, and those twins are still alive. So, it's very interesting because we all get together a lot. And it was 2001. I think I started going to Seneca Falls, New York, and I felt like Capper had been there and got a haircut, and I think he based the design of Bedford Falls from that town. And so we've started a festival, and so we have the Seneca Falls. It's a Wonderful Life Festival, the second weekend in December every year.
Oh, I got to make it there soon.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a documentary actually about the Seneca Falls Festival that is about to come out on Blu-ray, so I'm very excited to see that.
Yes.
Oh, it's quite the deal. But I've just really enjoyed traveling around for the film. And after we wrote the cookbook, Franklin and I decided we'd do this one this year to celebrate and the 75th anniversary and include a lot of interviews from cast members. And there's recipes from cast members in the book.
Oh, great.
And it's really a fun achievement.
Yeah, the cookbook is really great. I have it dog-eared with a few recipes we want to try right away. And there's some great, imagery from the movie in there, as well as some trivia, to play along. So it's just not, listed recipes. And then the recipes have It's a Wonderful Life titles to them. From characters.
Now, we spent hours digging around trying to figure out the name.
Yeah. So things now, such as creamy Krabby Potter pasta salad.
Yeah, it took us a long time to do that. We finally got it done, but oh my goodness, Mary's homemade homestick apple spice cake, mm-hmm. and you know, heaven sent cherry cream cheesecake. There's all of these crabby mother-in-law fruity salad cake, the bartender's rum cake.
Now, Carolyn, in addition to It's Wonderful Life, you are kind of a double Christmas legacy, because you are also one of the children in The Bishop's Wife.
That's right.
I'm kind of curious. The part of the legend of that film is that they started shooting. Cary Grant was playing the bishop. David Niven was playing the angel. Right. Teresa Wright was the wife. Then they shut down, rewrote it, recast it, and then start over again. Were you working on both parts, or did you come in for the second go around?
I came in for the second go around. The head of the studio came to the set, and apparently he wasn't happy with the way the movie was going. So, you know, he fired everybody and changed everybody. Well, it caused some hard feelings. And when the current The Bishop's Wife started, you know, they hired Henry Koster as the director.
Right.
And he had a different vision, so he changed the parts around. And David Niven kind of resented that. And so Cary Grant and David Niven and Loretta Young really didn't have anything to do with each other. It was kind of weird. But Cary Grant had a lot to do with me. I mean, he'd take me around and pull me on a sled every day at lunch, and he'd tell me stories. He loved kids, so it was really kind of fun. And I loved him. I thought he was just the very best. So we had a really great time. And I didn't know he was a handsome dude. But he was great. He really was. And the movie was directed, as I said, by Harry Koster. And Henry Koster. I don't know if you know, as a film critic, that in every movie that Henry made, he loved his wife very, very much. And she was a star as well. She'd been a horror movie star. And Peggy Moran was her name. He made a bust of her. And that bust is in every movie he ever made.
I did not know that. That's wild.
Fantastic.
So even at that age, I mean, you're talking about the hard feelings on the set. Even as a young actress, you could sort of sense the tension on a movie like this, as opposed to maybe the atmosphere that Capra was able to create for It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, you're directed from the very beginning. I was told not to go near David Niven. He didn't like kids. Don't go around him. And not to go around Loretta Young either. She was not so much, because she was just busy concentrating on her lines. She worked very hard. Women, compared to men in those days, had to do twice as good a job as the man to make it in that particular era. So she just studied her script nonstop. And so Cary Grant, I think, had an exceptional memory and mind. And I never saw him with a script ever. He never studied, and I noticed.
I'm also just, you know, you were during your period as a working actress in Hollywood, it is one that we look back now, obviously, at with a great deal of fondness. And I know, you know, you've talked a lot about It's Wonderful Life, which is great. And it's wonderful to have, you know, kind of your oral history, because that's such an important movie. But, you know, you were in a Randolph Scott Western, and you were in a Betty Grable musical, and you were in Sister Kenny with Rosalind Russell. I'm wondering if there are other just moments or roles from that era that you remember with fondness that maybe, you know, people don't ask about, because of course we're all dying to know all the good Zuzu Bailey stories.
Well, I have to say that the Westerns were really my favorite, because, you know, I really enjoyed like working with John Wayne and Rio Grande, and we were in Moab, Utah for 3 weeks. And I got to ride in covered wagons with Indians chasing us on horses. And, you know, it was fabulous. I really had a great time. So I liked doing that. I and in the in Albuquerque with Randall Scott, I got to ride in coaches and stage coaches and all that sort of thing. It was really great. I mean, I really liked the Westerns. I thought they were really fun because I got to do more dangerous stuff. And in Albuquerque, I rode on the top of the stagecoach where the driver sits.
Okay.
And Gabby Hayes was the driver.
Oh.
And he wouldn't do it in the scenes where, you know, they're rushing into the town. He told the director, you know, that they had a stunt double do it for him. And he went to the director and said, you know, you shouldn't have that little girl up there. She shouldn't be there. I wasn't tied in or anything. And the stagecoach comes running into the town, you know, because he's got a dead body aboard. And it just, you know, I thought it was great. But I remember because the director didn't go for what Gabby wanted him to do. He just kept me up there. I thought it was super fun.
But, that's the headline here. Carolyn Grimes did her own stunts.
You know? Yeah, it was fun, I'll tell you. But I don't think they would do that today. Now, I wasn't tied in any of the covered wagons or anything back in the day. So wow. I loved the Westerns. I thought they were really a lot of fun. And I did one with Judy Canova, and that was really fun, too. Mm-hmm. She was great to work with. So that was a neat time in my life when I could do all those things. It was cool.
So, Carolyn, do you have any, if someone called you to do a cameo in a Christmas movie, it's something you think you'd be up to nowadays?
Oh, I don't know. You know, the thing is they don't recognize me.
Yeah.
You know?
There's got to be a way.
I've got the best of both worlds because I'm pretty popular and pretty famous, certainly around Christmas. Uh-huh. But yet, people don't know who I am. So, you know, it's really great because when they find out, you know, their eyes go big and they go, "Really? I watch that movie every year at Christmas." You know. Uh-huh. So I have the best of both worlds. I've been very fortunate and I've been given a gift. And because of that, I try to make that gift matter. And so I try to spread the messages from the film and make people realize that their lives do count.
Yeah.
I have so many people that come to me and they're on the bridge. You know, they really have a lot of problems and they sit down and watch the movie every year and it kind of rejuvenates them and they realize there is hope.
Right.
And it's saved a lot of lives. I'll tell you that.
Wow. Yeah. I've always said that if you know what A Christmas Carol is to England, you know, It's a Wonderful Life is what we have in America. And that would make you the Tiny Tim.
Well, yes, but you know what? It is the number one Christmas movie in the United Kingdom.
Oh, great. Well, you know, yeah. And we love A Christmas Carol, so we've done a good trade there.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have.
Oh. Carolyn, I got a little story I just gotta tell you while you're here with us. It's a Wonderful Life's been not only my favorite Christmas movie, but one of my favorite movies of all time for quite a while. But I had never seen it at a movie theater on the big screen. And last year, 2020, with the craziness 2020 was, my wife, you know, movie theaters were struggling because, you know, what nobody was allowed to gather. So my wife rented one of the auditoriums at our local theater for a private viewing for, you know, our family and my parents and my sister and her family and a few others, which happened to be, you know, my uncle and his son. And it was December, so she chose to watch It's a Wonderful Life because she knew I loved it so much and had never seen it on the big screen. And so we went, there was about, I guess, 20 of us total, and we was able to spread out, you know, nice and in our groups and see each other. And this happened to be my uncle's first Christmas without my aunt after like 63 years of marriage. And we all sit there at the theater and watch It's a Wonderful Life on big screen. And we all, you know, were moved by the movie like it does. And it was almost like watching it again for the first time, because it was so, not that the movie was different, but the experience was so much different seeing it live, up, you know, on film like that and projected, in on that size. And when the movie was over, we just kind of all stood up and looked at each other and we just had this shared experience. And, you know, my uncle was, you know, moved to tears, and, but, you know, it was like healing tears, you know, in his heart. And after, you know, everything everybody's been through in 2020, we all were just like, we all needed to see this movie together, mm-hmm. you know, at the theater where mm-hmm. there was no distractions and stuff. And it was just, it was a gift and a memory that I will not soon forget. And I just wanted to share that with you why I had the opportunity, because it the movie is still, you know, touching people's hearts and minds still today. And thank you for being a part of that.
Well, you found the magic by watching it with people. Yeah. I do screenings all over the United States. And when you have a group of people that are together, it the feelings and emotions, you know, kind of pass from one person to another. When there's a funny place, everybody laughs. Or, you know, when there's a sad place, everybody's sad. It's the emotions that go through all the people connect. And it's a riveting experience to watch it on the big screen, I think. And I always enjoy doing that.
Yeah, absolutely is.
Yeah, that's part of our annual Christmas traditions. We go to the Arrow Theater in Santa Monica, and it's always great because before it starts, the person who's introducing it will say, well, who's never seen this movie before? And a few hands will go up, and you can tell everybody else, like, oh, that's so cute, you've never seen this before. And, like, you know, like you're being welcomed into the group. And yeah, no, absolutely. I think you can feel that collective intake of breath when, you know, Uncle Billy accidentally hands over the $8,000. There's this pay, like, oh no, it's happening again. Like you keep hoping every time you're gonna see it he's gonna not do it once, but nope, it's every time.
Awesome. Yeah, it happens every time.
Well, Carolyn, thank you so much for joining me here on Christmas Clatter. Let everybody know where they can find you. Are you on social media or anywhere?
Oh, I'm on Facebook, okay. And I also have a website, and it's zuzu.net, zuzu.net.
All right. I'll have links to Carolyn's social medias in the show notes and the description, so you guys will just be just a tap away. I also have a link to her book, Zuzu Bailey's It's a Wonderful Life cookbook. I encourage each and every one of you to check it out and get your own copy for this holiday season and enjoy everything it has to offer as well.
Yes, it's a personal tribute to this film, and it has a lot of wonderful things other than wonderful food in it.
Yes.
Well, thank you for taking time with us today.
That's a real big word in my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you so much, and thank you for being such a great ambassador of this movie. It's so great that you're able to go around and be. You have become part of this movie's heritage in the way you're able to go around and share these experiences. It's really, really great. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Well, Alonzo, let me ask you this about It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes, sir.
You've been a movie fan since you can remember. You've been a film critic for almost as long as you can remember.
A very long time.
Do you remember the first time you ever saw the movie It's a Wonderful Life?
You know, I don't, but I, again, because in the 70s, it was just on all the time. It is definitely one of those things where I just remember catching bits of it. And I think, you know, it would be a question of, I remember sort of watching I would always usually wind up in the Pottersville sequence and then kind of later reconstructing it. It wasn't until, I think I was, you know, maybe like 11 or 12 that I finally was like, you know what? I've seen this entire movie in pieces. I'm going to sit down and watch it from start to finish. But it was always a favorite in my house growing up. And I even remember, it's funny, I was thinking about this last night. There was one time where I woke up, you know, sort of late, which would have been like, you know, 9:30 or something. So I was a very little kid and I'd already been put to bed, but I heard the clip of George Bailey, you know, running through town at the end of the movie. And I sort of like snuck back into the living room to see what was up. And it was part of this like PBS documentary about Jimmy Stewart or whatever. But even by that point, I remember I already knew what that scene was and what it was attached to. So I can barely remember not having It's a Wonderful Life in my life, basically.
That sounds a whole lot like my memories of A Christmas Story with the marathon and things. But
well, you know, I mean, Ted Turner was very savvy about that because, you know, when it came time for A Christmas Story to start being, you know, aired on television, he had the example of It's a Wonderful Life to look at. Like that movie went from being forgotten and something of a flop to this beloved Christmas classic because it was just always on. Right. And so he's like, well, I have this TV channel and I have this movie. I'm just going to run this movie all the time as though it were It's a Wonderful Life and people will glom onto it. And they did.
Yeah, they did. You know, I distinctly remember the first time I seen It's a Wonderful Life. It was Christmas of 99. And I remember that because that was the year I got married that year to my first wife. And the house was decorated and I'd never seen it. So I went and bought it on DVD.
Oh, wow.
In black and white. And I always watch movies by myself. So it was like the house was completely dark except for the trees, the Christmas lights on the tree and stuff. And I watched it and I ain't afraid to admit it because I cry easy anyway, especially movies.
You're not made of stone. If you don't cry at It's a Wonderful Life, I question your
I was a mess at the end of it and loved it. And watched it every year and multiple. I wouldn't ever watch it not at Christmas time, even though I'd really want to. I'd always save it for, and I still do to this day, save it for a special moment. I don't have to be alone, but it has to be quiet and dark, you know. And
Carolyn said it, this movie is an emotional roller coaster. Like it's funny and then it's harrowing. And then it is this, you earn that ending, that incredibly jubilant ending, because that movie has just put you through the ringer by that point.
Yes, it does. And I even remember my first wife at the time, I was off work that day and she was heading out the door to work and she had my DVD copy of It's a Wonderful Life. This was a year or so later, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what are you doing with It's a Wonderful Life? Why are you taking it to work? And she says, well, my friend at work bought a copy for her husband, but they accidentally bought the colorized version. She's like, I was going to trade her. And I'm like, no, you're not. She can go find her own black and white version. I said, I do not do colorized black and white movies.
No.
And she just kind of looked at me funny. And I said, they chose those outfits for their shades of gray.
I always remember the Orson Welles in the later part of his life, when he said like his last wish was tell Ted Turner to keep his Crayolas off my movie.
So I don't think I have that DVD copy anymore. I did buy it on digital just for ease of watching, but 4K came out last year.
Yep.
And so I picked that up to have a physical copy.
Yeah, I made the mistake of hanging on to that one, but unfortunately I don't have a 4K system. So that set has a 4K and Blu-ray, but then the 4K and black and white, but then the Blu-ray is the colorized version. I was like, oh, dang it. No.
There's very few movies that are 75 years old that still get talked about.
This
one. You have It's a Wonderful Life, The Wizard of Oz, Gone with the Wind, still popular, but it seems the fandom may be waning on that.
It kind of has an asterisk now. Yeah. I mean, look, it's a great period of Hollywood studio filmmaking. Right. I mean, you know, they talk about 1939 being the peak of it, but I mean, like, you know, throughout World War II and even immediately thereafter. And I mean, the movie that beat out It's a Wonderful Life in most of its Oscar categories is The Best Years of Our Lives, which is still an amazing movie. But, you know, I always talk about how Christmas you know, whether it's the power of nostalgia or just the staying power of the things that we love, you know, it's the one time of year you're going to hear Andy Williams on FM radio. And it's the one time of year you're going to see a black and white movie get a 3-hour primetime slot on a major network.
Right. Right. And I pray that Hollywood leaves it alone. To tell you the truth, I've been known to recast stuff on this, and I thought about doing A Wonderful Life, and every time I do, it's like it's just a comical parody, you know. It's not going to hold the same weight.
I mean, here's the thing: there has been a remake and there has been a sequel, but like no one ever talks about them because they aren't particularly good. Marlo Thomas did a remake where she was the gender swapped lead in a film called It Happened One Christmas. And there's actually, and I've never seen this, and I need to track it down, but there was a made-for-TV movie about Clarence the Angel, like on his next assignment or something. But, you know, do these live in the pantheon of the canon of Christmas classics? No, they don't. It's A Wonderful Life,
though. Was that the TV movie the inspiration for Highway to Heaven, maybe?
Maybe. I don't know. But it's like I came across it in my research one day. I was like, this is a thing? This exists? I've never heard of this movie. I think it's like whichever, not David Carradine and not Keith Carradine, Robert Carradine, the Revenge of the Nerds one, plays Clarence the Angel. Like, okay, but I think also that might have been made during the public domain moment, and now that the copyright's been renewed, maybe it can't be shown or whatever. But clearly, it didn't make an impact. No one is talking about that movie.
Yeah. For our listeners and watchers out there, if you've been caught up on your weekly episodes a week or so ago, I had Brandon Gray from Take the Hallmark on, and Alonzo was brought up in that episode because he helped to write I'll Be Home for Christmas Movies, and it is available now. Where great books are sold, there's a link in the description, so I encourage you to tap on it. Alonzo, tell us a little bit about I'll Be Home for Christmas Movies.
Sure. So it's the Deck the Hallmark podcast guide to these Hallmark Christmas movies, which if you've ever listened to Deck the Hallmark, you know that if you like these movies, if you love these movies, or if you hate these movies, somebody on that show has your back and will voice that point of view. So the book, I think, also kind of captures that same spirit. So if you're a big fan of Hallmark movies, or if you can't stand them, you'll find this book pretty funny, I think, and a fun read. It's also got interesting behind the scenes tidbits from the various stars and filmmakers who do these movies that they've interviewed over the course of the podcast, recipes for throwing your own Hallmark Christmas viewing party, a little history of Hallmark and Christmas and television, which goes all the way back to the 1950s and the very first Hallmark Hall of Fame, which was also the very first original opera composed for television. It's just a fun, cozy Christmas movie guide. You know, whether you know these movies by heart or have a passing notion of them, I think it's a fun read, and it's a great gift for, you know, if your aunt or your grandmother or your sister who, you know, is into these movies, I think they'll enjoy it.
Yeah, it is. It's a great book. It's one of these books. I have a few of these books that I have some up on behind me, but what I do is at Christmas time, I pull them out and I'll take them and I'll put them on the end table in the living room.
Nice.
And that way when you have, you know, Christmas party or people over, it's like they grab it and they thumb it, they read it, you know, and then they're like, I got to get me a copy of that. Or, you know, it's not like something you just have to sit down and read all the way through. You can just, you know, pick up in the middle, and it is hilarious. The Deck the Hallmark podcast is a comedy podcast above and anything else, and it is funny, and you're able to capture that spirit very, very well. And
oh, thank you.
It's a well done book, and Alonzo doesn't know this, but he is also the author. You've heard me many times of I'll Be Home for
I know, I do that too. A
movie Little Christmas. I tell you what, for anybody that finds this YouTube video, tell us your favorite memory of It's a Wonderful Life, and you will be entered to win a copy of I'll Be Home for Christmas Movies and of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. So
well, that's great.
A double giveaway here. And just let me and Alonzo know your favorite It's a Wonderful Life memory. You know, if you love it, if you hate it, if you've never seen it even, just tell us you haven't seen it. And we'll encourage you to see it and get a chance to win a couple of great books on Christmas movies. I always tell people, if you say you're a Christmas movie fan and you do not have yourself a movie Little Christmas on your bookshelf, then you're lying. So
I'll take it.
it's a great book in its own right. And I'll Be Home for Christmas movie is a wonderful book as well. You're racking up quite a collection of great movies.
Thank you.
Alonzo, thanks so much for joining me and talking with Carolyn with me. We had planned to do It's a Wonderful Life, just me and you. And then this opportunity came around and we're like, we got
to
take it.
No, always a pleasure to talk to you, and a genuine thrill to talk to Carolyn, who is, you know, an icon. So yes, thank you for letting me come along on this.
So thank you so much, sir. And if I don't talk to you between now and then, and I probably will, have a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Christmas Clatter is a Very Merry Media production. And as always, keep Christmas hope alive every day.